Istanbul has always been a place of history and legend, business and pleasure, politics and culture. It is a city known by three names, each representing a different chapter in the multifaceted history of a place so extraordinary that it came to be known as the Queen of Cities. In the new book, Istanbul, A Tale of Three Cities, Bettany Hughes, an award-winning British historian, professor, and broadcaster, and author of the acclaimed Helen of Troy and the New York Times bestseller The Hemlock Cup, has written a 800-page history of Istanbul. It is a fascinating look, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Bettany Hughes to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
A delight to be here with you too.
It is fascinating, as the subtitle suggests, A Tale of Three Cities. What was the motivation for you to write about this tale of these three cities?
Well, I think the personal motivation was it's a city, Istanbul is a place that I've been going back to for 30 years. So I first went as a very callow 18-year-old, fell in love with the history of the place. So it's a city I know very well. But it seems to me it's one of the most critically important cities in the whole story of the world. People forget that this is the oldest city in Europe. So there's been a settlement there for at least 8,000 years. It's been the capital of civilizations, of the Roman civilization, of the Byzantine civilization, of the Ottoman civilization. So it's a real turning point between all worlds, between East and West, North and South. And so it seemed to me really bizarre that nobody had done a very thorough history of the place right from the very beginning, from prehistory through to the present. So 10 years ago, I set myself that task. It was 10 years in the writing, and I got there in the end.
So yeah. as you point out, this is a city that is known by three names. Talk to us about those names, and ultimately how that helped you break up the book.
Well, it does have three names, as you say. So originally, when it was a Greek city, it was called Byzantion, and that then, under the Romans, then became Byzantium. So it was the city of Byzantium. Then when the Roman Emperor Constantine the Great converted to Christianity and wanted to found a new headquarters for his imperial capital, and also really for a headquarters for the kind of capital of Christianity on earth, he refounded the city as Constantinople, gave it his own name, Constantine. Constantinople was the great civilization of Byzantium, confusingly enough, over the medieval world. And then when the Ottomans come, it becomes an Islamic city, and it's given the name Istanbul. So that's why it has three names. It's actually called all kinds of other names through history. There's one Roman emperor who calls it after himself and calls it Augusta Antonina. But it was what's really fascinating to me are the beautiful names it's described as being. So it's called the Queen of Cities, the greatest city on earth, the world's desire, a diamond between two sapphires, a threshold. So throughout its story and throughout history, people have loved both the place of Istanbul and the idea of it as almost a kind of perfect place on earth.
That idea of the Queen of Cities, it says so much about the place, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, it's so evocative. Often people actually just called it the city, capital T, capital C, because they recognized it was one of the most potently influential cities in the story of the world. So they didn't even need to give it a name. But yeah, the Queen of Cities is a really interesting title. It was such a central place where people came from all walks of life and from all corners of the globe, because of course it's the western end of the Silk Route that come all the way from China through the Caucasus, through the Middle and Near East and down from Eastern Asia. They end up in Constantinople, Istanbul. So it was an incredible trading city. But something that I've loved writing about in the book as well is the fact that it was as important to travelers and journeymen from the north. So the Vikings, for instance, were absolutely obsessed with Istanbul, Constantinople as it was then. They tried to attack it, they besieged it, or they were fought back with Greek fire. But they kind of were always half in love with the place as well. And they used to wear, I don't think we think of Vikings wearing beautiful silk scarves, but they used to buy these beautiful silk scarves from Constantinople and silk for their sails of their sailing ships. And inside one of the most amazing buildings, and you know what has to be one of the greatest monuments in the world, the Hagia Sophia Church, some naughty Vikings have scratched in Viking runes into the marble. So they've scratched Viking letters into the marble. And we've just discovered as well, just in time for me to get it into the book, somebody's been standing and praying because they've converted to Christianity by this point, but they've also scratched into the columns with their brooch pins these kind of cartoon pictures of Viking ships with their dragons, prows, these great long ships. So it's been a kind of home to so many people of so many kinds. I think that is one of the reasons it was so centrally important, kind of in people's minds and to the story of the world.
It seems like there must have been many challenges in telling this story, but certainly in writing in detail about the early period, as it has not been done really before.
No, I know. Well, I never like to make things easy for myself. I'm kind of very interested in the Spartans and the Spartan culture, who are very, never took the easy route, always took the hard route. So I think that's what I do to myself sometimes when I'm writing these big history books. But no, I thought it was really just fascinating to look at that early period. It was actually one of the reasons that I decided to write the book as well, is that because it's a city which is developing hugely, there's an enormous amount of building work going on in the city, these great high-rises going up. And as a historian and archaeologist, I know that means that there are going to be incredible archaeological finds as the foundations are being dug down. And indeed, because there's a new metro system in Istanbul, and there's also these two huge tunnels going physically underneath the Bosphorus, joining Asia and Europe, so a road tunnel and a rail tunnel, and that's thrown up amazing artifacts, all kinds of things. So we've got this little plucky little community who were first there. So we've got the world's oldest wooden coffin has been discovered on the banks of the Bosphorus, the world's oldest canoe paddle, incredible evidence of the lives that they lived, this very early community when they were surrounded by 9,000 species of flower, and we know they'd wake up in the morning and pick fresh figs and chestnuts and pistachios from pistachio forests. So it was very kind of, you know, almost like a sort of Edenic blessed place, and I think that idea of the city as being in some way blessed has really carried on through its history.
One of the things that I found fascinating about the book that I think really comes out in your story is the role that women played in Istanbul's history. Did that surprise you, or did you know that going in?
Well, I was really fascinated by the fact that it's a place where empresses seem to have real power throughout the late Roman and medieval period. I mean, there are these incredible characters who rule. There's a woman called Theodora who starts out life right at the bottom of the pile. I mean, she's, shall we put it politely, an erotic dancer in the city of Constantinople. But she's also super smart. She gets employed as an imperial spy, and she manages to get into the court, attract the attention of the soon-to-be emperor, the great Emperor Justinian, and they marry. And these two are a sort of medieval power couple. So suddenly she's ruling, as I say, a million square miles of land. And together they build the Hagia Sophia. And they put in all kinds of amazing legal reforms of sort of social justice, because they were pious Christians and they really believed that the poor and the needy and the outcasts also deserved their care. So they set up refugee centres and centres for homeless mothers, and they reform prisons so that women don't have to kind of stay in prisons with men. I mean, they're unbelievably progressive. And this was 1,500 years ago. So Theodora is just one example. But you're absolutely right. Really fascinating to me. If you look at the history, it feels like a place where women, for some reason, just managed to have more status than they do elsewhere. So women there could read and write, whereas they couldn't in much of the rest of Europe. And it carries on, actually, interestingly, through to the Ottoman period as well, where you get these concubines who are basically kind of running international politics. There's a great woman, again, the mother of the Sultan in the 16th century, called Safiye, and her name means pleasing one. You know, and she's in the harem, so she's been a concubine in the harem, but because her son has become sultan, she has great status. And we've got this incredible series of letters that she writes to the British queen, or the English queen at the time, Queen Elizabeth I. So Elizabeth I and this ex-concubine sitting in Istanbul in the harem are basically sorting out international politics between them in this correspondence of letters. And I kind of particularly love the detail that they've kind of sorted out. They've done all the diplomatic stuff. They've dealt with pirates. They've worked out trade deals. And then at the end, there's a kind of PS, and Safiye from Istanbul writes to Elizabeth, Queen Elizabeth I, and says, "Oh, I hear that in your land you have beautiful flowers and odoriferous oils for the hands. And could you send me some of your lovely things?" So basically, they kind of start to exchange makeup tips at the end of this letter. So yeah, it is. I was kind of aware of it, and I was really excited to research the story of women in the city, but I wasn't expecting to find quite so much evidence of these, you know, incredible individuals and incredible tenacity of the role of women right the way through the story of the city. So that was a very, very pleasant surprise for me.
I know you were in the city shortly before last year's coup, and then you were in the city shortly after. What does that say about the city? Because as you read the book, it really has always been this place for people to take their ideas to the streets.
Yeah, and isn't that interesting that it's a city with a kind of history of protest, sometimes violent, often peaceful, though, this notion that the citizens of the city really counted. And I almost wonder if it's something to do. It's such an incredible city geographically. I mean, it's so dramatic. If you go there, you know, because you physically have got, you're sitting on Europe in the historic center, and then you've got Asia across the Bosphorus Straits, you've got the Sea of Marmara, go south, and you've got Africa, go north up across the Black Sea, and there's Russia. And so it's this sort of incredible, you know, geographically and topographically, it's a very exciting city. And I almost think if that made people feel somehow the city was such a character, the citizens could be the city's voice, and they didn't just have to do what their rulers said. So right the way through the history of the city, as you say, you find these popular protests and riots and citizens taking to the streets. And there's one amazing medieval author, he says, oh, you know, the indifference of the people in the marketplace to their rulers is as if though it were in them inborn. And, you know, he's not actually being complimentary, but it really struck me when I was there. I was there as well, just happened to be there at the same time as the Taksim Square riots, the Getty Park protests, with my two daughters. So I don't know if I went from being the most exciting mum in the world to the kind of worst mum at that point, but we were ended up kind of getting, because we were staying close to the protests, so we had to kind of run away from the tear gas and stuff. But it was, you know, scary but also amazing watching history in the making like that, and as I said, realizing that was part of the character of the city across not just centuries but thousands of years.
And you were here to tell us that certainly there are hazards throughout the world, and we should be aware of that, but Istanbul is a place to go and to visit and to cherish.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I'm heading off there week after next. You know, it's actually a very safe city. It's having a tough time at the moment, but, you know, on the streets it's very safe. And I think it's partly because it seems to me it's cracked kind of conundrum of how it is that we can all live together, because from its very birth it's an incredibly cosmopolitan city. So it's a city that welcomed around 40, 50, 60, 70 people of different ethnic origins. We have these communities there. People flooded there during the Second World War. It was one of the few places where Jewish families were allowed to enter on the passports of Muslim students. So they fled occupied France and ended up in the city. So it's always been a city of sanctuary for those who needed sanctuary. And it's got this incredible constitutional cosmopolitanness, and I think that is its great strength, and I think we can all learn a lot from that. You know, it's no coincidence it's also survived as an incredibly powerful city across 8,000 years, and I think it's because it welcomes in strangers as well as friends.
I knew very little about the city before reading the book, and one of the things that struck me and why I enjoyed it so is it seems that you just have such affection for the place.
I do. I mean, I'm really fortunate in my work because I'm a historian of the ancient world and ancient civilizations, and I make these television programs as well as writing books. I spend my life traveling around the world. I'm very, very lucky. And it's certainly, of all places, it still is one of the most special places on Earth. And I kind of feel it's a place that we'll need to care about because, in a way, as I said, I think it tells us the story of what it is to be human and how it is that we can best live together. So I am very affectionate for it. And even after spending 10 years writing this book, I still love the place. So that has to say something.
Absolutely. Well, it's a beautiful book and just an amazing undertaking. It is Istanbul, A Tale of Three Cities. It is published by Da Capo. Bettany Hughes, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much for sharing.
Absolute pleasure talking to you.
Great pleasure.
Have a safe rest of the day.
And to you. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Istanbul, A Tale of Three Cities, published by Da Capo, by Bettany Hughes. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.